I don't know about you, but as the nights get brighter, I start to look forward to summer, and in particular to barbecues. Although I have been known to do a bit of barbecuing in the snow while waiting for summer, but if I'm honest, even I will admit that some things have their place and their time. Flip-flops, for example, in snow is not a good idea. Right or wrong? Right, wrong. Flip-flops any time of the year. Maybe you have an experience or a memory of being in the wrong place at the wrong time. You were slightly overdressed for the party, wearing a heavy coat on a warm day. These are flippant examples, but this morning as we are pressing ahead with our series in Ecclesiastes, and as we head into chapter 3, the message is that everything has its time. Everything has a place. Now, if you've been over the last few weeks, you already have a bit of background to the book. It was written about 3,000 years ago by King Solomon, possibly the wisest man to ever lived other than Jesus. He had everything the world had to offer: wisdom, education, power, wealth, women. And yet, despite all that, he looks back on his life and he thinks, yeah, sure, sometimes I've had a good time. In fact, sometimes I had a really good time. But is that all there is? There has to be more to it than just this. He calls life meaningless. You'll remember he says, it's like a vapor, like a puff or a smoke or a cloud of mist that you just can't quite get hold of, no matter how hard you try. For Solomon, despite all the blessings and all the good things he had, found that a meaningful life proved to be elusive. And as we found out last week, for all the differences that culture brings, unlimited wealth and 3,000 years bring, his life was maybe not all that different to the pattern of our own lives. And as we left Solomon last week in chapter 2, he was thinking about death. Rich or poor, foolish or wise, we are all going to die. No matter how much knowledge you think you have, no matter what you think you have achieved, no matter how much you own, death is the great leveler. We all stand equal before death. And so now as we move into chapter 3, Solomon is working through some of this to make sense of it for us. Now it's true, these are Solomon's words written in all the wisdom that God had granted him. But 2 Timothy tells us, all scripture is God-breathed, is useful for teaching, rebuking, correcting, and training in righteousness. So when Solomon wrote these words, he was carried along and inspired by the Holy Spirit. This is not just what Solomon has to say to us. This is what God has to say. And the first thing we see that everything has a time for it, or a season. Like I said at the beginning, everything has a time and a place, and it's already decided. It's already appointed. Everything has a time and a place ordained by God. We have no control over whether it's summer, winter, autumn, or spring, although sometimes we wish we did. In the same way, we have no control over what season in life we will be going through. The list that Solomon gives us in verse 3 through to 8, take a look at it if you have your Bible open. Within that list, it would be great if that long list of seasons were more like a menu in a restaurant. And then we could look down it and choose what we want. So I'll take being born, but the dying part, I'll give that a miss for today. Well, I'll throw in a wee bit of laughter at the side, give me some dancing, some healing, a bit of building, some peace, some love, a hug. Given the opportunity, that's how we all would treat the list. That's the sort of life that we would look for. No one would want to choose a time to weep. No one would want to choose a time to die or a time to mourn. No one would actually choose a time to hate or to war or to lose and to give up. But without these things, what sort of people would we be? The truth is, these are things that we have no power over. Sometimes we call this the great, or we create this illusion for ourselves that we are in control, that we determine what happens in our lives and when. We make plans without any reference to God. We decide what is right and what is wrong. We decide what happens and what doesn't. To use the grand phrase, we are masters of our own destinies. Our passage this morning starts off by telling us that we're not. God determines the seasons of our lives just as he determines the weather. We are not in control, and often we struggle with that. When the weeping, mourning, dying, tearing down times come, we rail against God, we become bitter, and we can doubt. We say things like, how can God be all good and all powerful when things like that happens? But Ecclesiastes tells us that everything has its place. I remember telling you a story I heard an American pastor once. The guy has three children. The eldest is 12. And one day the child wanted to go somewhere with her friends, and he had forbidden it. And so he said to her, tell me this. Are you smarter? Do you know more than your brother or sister? Of course, she said, thinking that that was getting her somewhere. Of course I know better. Then he said, why is that? Well, she said, because I'm older than them. I know more. So he said, if you're smarter and wiser than your younger brother and sister because they are 12 and you are 12 and they are 8, is it possible that I am smarter and wiser than you and that I see more than you because you are 12 and I am 45? I'm not 45. There's a truth in that exchange we exchange about God. We live at best, what, 90, 100, 110 years? And that's pretty impressive. But how does it measure compared to God who's always been, the God who will always be? How does that compare to the eternal, infinite God? Is it possible then in all of this that he sees much, much more than we do? You see, far from being a despairing, pessimistic view of the world, Ecclesiastes chapter 3 starts off with one of the most comforting and positive truths. God has it all in hand. He sees all, he knows all, and he has it at hand. So it's your time to die. It's okay. God has it in hand. He has determined the hour, and as Christians, he has made provision for us. Just think of John 14. In my house are many rooms. I go there to prepare a place for you. It's hard, but it's okay. It's all in his hands. So it's your time to mourn. God knows that. It's in his hand. You are in a difficult season in life. It's your time to weep. It's okay. God has appointed a time for weeping. He knows where you're at. We can face these amazing times with confidence because we know that God is in control. And more than that, Ecclesiastes says that he has made everything beautiful in its time. Now, maybe you're thinking about some of the darkest, difficult experiences of your life. Maybe you're looking around at the world at some of the horrors and you see it on the TV and you're wondering, how can any of this be beautiful? The truth is, maybe we just don't see. Maybe we just don't see fully enough. In 1 Corinthians, Paul says, we see as though through a dim, cloudy window, but God sees all. We see a piece of glass, God sees the stained glass window. Now, this doesn't mean that everything in your life is beautiful. If you're facing hardship or illness at the minute, you will know that that is far from beautiful. What it means is that God works to bring everything together. It's a bit like a cross stitch. Some of you cross stitch. Just a wee survey for myself. Who can cross stitch? Okay. Now, I know very little about cross stitching. But I have seen them, and I have been in many a house that has cross stitches up on the walls. They are impressive. But if you look at the back of the work of a cross stitch, what is it? It is all threads. It's horrible. Everywhere, knots everywhere, loose ends everywhere, and it just looks a bit wick. And then when you turn it over, ta-da! It's a totally different story. It is a complete work of art. I think that's a bit like our passage, or what our passage is getting at here. Life is messy. It's hard going at times. We feel like things don't work out. There's knots here, and there's loose ends there, but we don't see what God sees. God sees the full picture. He sees how all these threads come together to make the work of art on the other side. He sees how all things are made beautiful in their time. We don't. Our passage tells us in verse 11, no one can fathom what God has done from beginning to end. Often it would be good to have some insight into what God is doing. How often have we prayed, God, I just wish I knew what your plan was. I wish I knew why you were doing this. There's a real recognition here in this passage that at times we will feel like this. And so as Christians, how do we approach all these different seasons of life? How do we face all that life throws at us? I wonder, have you ever been accused of wasting your life away? Maybe you sit in work and you look out the window, your head down, at the computer going, oh, I wish it was the weekend. Maybe you're wishing the end of your studies. Or maybe you're looking forward to retirement. Maybe you're looking forward to getting to your children to a certain age and hoping that everything will fall into place. Whatever it is, it seems like we're always looking forward, looking to the next season, anticipating what comes next. However, sometimes we fail to live in the present, and so we can sort of miss the opportunities that God gives us now. No matter what season you're in, God gives opportunities to find satisfaction and joy in Him. Do you remember last week at the end of the service, I asked you, what is the purpose of man? What is man's chief end? Man's chief end is to glorify God and enjoy Him forever. God gives us opportunities to worship Him and to serve Him. At the minute in our house, we are preparing for a season of sleepless nights. I thought personally that season had passed, but it's coming back. As many of you will know, these days can be hard. I will be looking for matchsticks to keep my eyes open, but it's also a time of blessing and a time of opportunity. Our children will not always be small. They will not always need or want us in the middle of the night. God willing, they will one day grow up and move out. And our opportunity to put them to sleep and to comfort them at night will be gone. Although that's not always easy to remember at 4 a.m. But one thing is for sure, these seasons do not last long. Life is short, here one day, gone the next. And so in all these different phases, we need to accept the season of life that we are in at the minute and identify the opportunities God has given us within them. That's the realization Solomon appears to come to as we head towards the end of our passage. It may be an opportunity to rejoice in great blessing, or an opportunity to serve others, in a time of great sacrifice. It may be a dark time through which God reveals himself to you in a deeper way. There is a time for everything, and all these seasons bring with opportunities to know and to serve God more. Opportunities to explore how a meaningless life can become meaningful. I don't have time to go through each of the contrasts in the passage, but as you scan them down, you will see the whole spectrum of life. Maybe when you go home, or sometime this week, find some time to go through them yourself. Nothing that you will go through, no obstacle you will face, no pain you will suffer, is beyond God's redeeming hand. All things made beautiful in their time. Nothing is outside of God's control. He has authority over it all and is providentially weaving all of this together. And yet, even when we know this, even when we trust in this, the difficult seasons in our lives still seem hard to accept. And Ecclesiastes gives us the answer to why that is. Why is it hard? The teacher, the Qohelet, the preacher, the churchman explains that God has put eternity in the hearts of men. We touched on this a bit last week when we thought about how the pleasures of this life are temporary and only satisfy for a while. Now in chapter 3 we are told why. It's because God has placed eternity in our hearts. If you have your own Bible, underline it. Sometimes you will hear people who have come to faith talking about a gap in their lives or a space in their heart that they just could not fill before they became a Christian. Sometimes people describe it as a God-shaped hole. Here in Ecclesiastes tells us that we have eternity in our hearts. We long for the permanent, we long for the forever, we long for the eternal. That's why we struggle so much with death. That's why we struggle so much with destruction, with breakup, with disease. Because it's not what we are made for. We were not made for this broken world. We're not made for this fallen world. Our hearts tell us that every day. And I had to pause to think about this through the week. My great aunt on Monday passed away. She was 96. She didn't pass away on Monday. If you know on Monday. But she was 96. She passed peacefully, surrounded by her large family. She had lived a long, full, healthy, and largely happy life. She had a life and a death that many of us would hope for. And naturally, we were saddened by her passing. Her family will miss her. But there was more to the grief than that. At each and every funeral, there is more to grief than that. We mourn our loved one, of course we do, but more than that, we also struggle with death itself. We mourn the presence of death in our lives. The most sure and certain thing of all is death. Also feels like the most unfair and unnatural thing of all. Why is that? Because God has placed eternity in our hearts. Sickness, death, suffering, disease are just not compatible with that. I quoted C.S. Lewis last week. I'm going to do it again this week. He says, if we find ourselves with a desire that nothing in this world can satisfy, the most probable explanation is that we were made for another world. I'm going to say that again. If we find ourselves with a desire that nothing in this world can satisfy, the most probable explanation is that we were made for another world. If we were not made for more, we would not long for it so much. The things that pass away are great while they last, but they cannot satisfy that longing for the eternal. Only God himself will do that. Now, having said all of this, Solomon appears to return to the question he asked at the very beginning of the book. What does man gain from all his toil? If God is in control of everything, what does man gain from all his work? Now we already have the answer of this in chapter 2. We heard it last week. In verse 11 he despairingly says he gained nothing. All his efforts, all his accomplishments have meant nothing. Yet here in chapter 3 we see that Solomon is starting to come to a different conclusion. Life does not have to be meaningless. Seen through the lens of God's providence, seen in the light of God's hand working through times and seasons, life can be beautiful. Rather than pointlessly striving after the wind, the teacher recognizes that there is point and purpose to all things because God makes everything beautiful in its time. God makes everything beautifully fitting. So we can fret about the meaninglessness of life. We can constantly strive after the wind, trying to fill that eternal space in our hearts with the things that pass away: wealth, power, status, the good opinion of others, family, comfort, pleasure. We can pursue the temporary, and just like Solomon did, he can become depressed and fatalistic. Or alternatively, we can see the lives in the context of the Creator God who loves us and who is at work in each of our situations. We can place our trust in that fact that he is working all things through together for the good of those who love him, whatever the season. We can place our trust in Jesus, whose work on the cross means that someday those hard seasons of our lives will be no more. In Jesus, whose life, death, resurrection means that one day every longing of our hearts will be fully satisfied in him. What season are you in this morning? We are all in a season, one another. Is it a season of blessing and of joy? Is it a season of bitterness? Is it a season of loss or a season of illness? Take some time to think about what season of life you're in and offer it back to God. Pray that you will find satisfaction and joy in him in the here and the now. Pray that you will have opportunities to enjoy the gifts God has given. No matter what season you're going through at the minute, look to the Creator God who's threading it all together. Look to Jesus, because it is only through him that our hearts will find true and lasting satisfaction.